You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 9th, 2018, and episode number 345. And as always, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Yeah, second show of January already. It's flying by. This year will be gone before you know it. And hopefully it picks up news-wise. This is kind of, it's not a lot of weird stuff out there. There is some stuff tonight, though, so never fear. We're going to talk MUFON sighting statistics for December. We'll also recap the year that was 2017. We'll do some reverse ghost hunting, whatever that is. And I forgot to put that other headline in. We're gonna look for some ghosts and stuff too tonight. It's gonna be some weird, wacky stuff. Also have the book of the week. That's back. That's always fun. Did a lot of reading over. I didn't really have a Christmas break, but you know. During Christmas, got a lot of books, so I've done a lot of reading, and we're going to hit back into the book of the week stuff, which I really like. I really enjoy that. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. And for more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Please. It's a great organization, great school. You'll love it. Trust me, you'll learn a lot. And speaking of learning a lot, hope you tuned in last night to Colin Schneider's show, the Crypto Kid radio show. I was kind of a impromptu last second guest. I guess the network's going to make me a t-shirt that says token last second guest. That's what I was, but I don't mind. I always have something to say. I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe I should have said that, but I do always have something to talk about, and I think I'm a semi-interesting person, and Colin reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to be on the show tomorrow? And I said, sure. And we did talk a lot about the cryptozoology news from 2017, and some stuff I really didn't get into when I did the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017. So there's an interesting little twist there talking about the cryptid news that was for 2017. And we spent I don't know, the last 30-40% of the show talking about one of my favorite topics, the Eastern Cougar. So definitely check that out. And you can find those archives pretty much anywhere and everywhere that you listen to your favorite podcast, your favorite, well, I guess it's podcasts, radio shows. Again, Crypto Kid radio show for January 8th. It was a fun show. It was a lot of good information, especially with the paranormal news stories of 2017. And speaking of which, if you missed those shows, 5 weeks worth where I counted down two stories a week for 5 weeks down to number two and number one. If you missed all that, well, and you don't want to listen to me ramble on for 5 hours, that's a lot of hours of listening to me ramble. You can go ahead and you can read about that. Granted, it's like a small book. It seems like every year this paranormal news stories of the year wrap up thing gets a little longer. It's like 14,000 words. It's like a nice short story there, but it's chock full of great information and a little couple of pictures here and there to break up the monotony of the writing. And you can check that out if you go to paranewsinsider.com and click, there's a blog link there. You can click on that. Then you go to the official Paranormal News Insider blog. You can find a link to that, and you can read about the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017. Also, other links there as well. You can check out, gosh, if you want to go back in time and read the other ones, you can go ahead and do that as well. And essentially, well, I'll give you the cheat, paranewsinsider.blogspot.com, and you can go and check out the latest post. There is the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017, where I count it down, and you can read at your leisure about these stories. And it's essentially a condensed version of what I talked about, very condensed. I try to condense it. My goodness, it just goes on and on and on. It'd probably take you a good 45 minutes to an hour to read all this stuff, lots of stuff. But that's good, right? Good content. Let's see, what else is going on? I don't know. Geez, lots of notes here. Events listing. How could I forget about that? Also on the website, paranewsinsider.com, I have this fancy schmancy list of events there at the top, paranormal conferences, conventions. Getting a lot of people talking about this and emailing me about different things and asking questions about stuff. I'm not really in charge of all these. I'm just putting them up there for your entertainment. What do they say about people copying you? It's some kind of form of something, or I don't know. I've seen a few people that have copied and pasted this. I'm kind of, I don't know. It kind of makes me mad to an extent, but it's flattering that people find this list so wonderful that they want to copy and paste it on their websites. It's kind of illegal, but I didn't get mad or anything. It is what it is. That's the internet for you. But it's flattering, I guess, in a way. Don't recommend doing that, because if I'm having a bad day, I'll come after you. But anyway, it's a great list, and I think it's one of the best, if not the best, lists out there. And a lot of people start doing these things, and then they're wonderful. Like I've stolen some stuff from other people. Their listings, some of their listings, not the whole entire list itself, and put it on my website. I would never do that. But they seem like they just do it one year and it's gone. And I've been doing this now for probably at least 6-7 years. I've been putting this list together, and I think it gets better every year. So definitely check this out. If you're into ghosts, if you're into cryptozoology, like Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and all those things, if you're into UFO events, check this list out. There's already about 50, and I still have some work to do probably during the week or maybe this weekend. There's a few more that I need to add to make this even bigger and even more exciting. I haven't updated it. It's been just over a month, it says here. So I'll get in there. I'll add some more, but we got a few coming up. According to this, second annual Winter Parafest is coming up. That's always a good thing. New York. Yeah. Well, hopefully the weather holds out. I know it's been touch and go here in Ohio. It's supposed to actually get over the not only the 30s, but into the 40s. People will be wearing shorts tomorrow. I guarantee it. I will see people with shorts and short sleeve shirts. I already know it. And then, 2 weeks later, everybody will be in the hospital with the flu. But it's life in the Northeast. That's what we do. We're crazy and we love our weather. Not really. But the big event, if you haven't heard, in this region, in this area, the biggest event is happening in February. The Twinsburg Paranormal Conference. Yeah, Twinsburg. What is that? Well, every year, the city of Twinsburg, which was founded by twins, has Twins Day in either late August or early September. It's really creepy, but it's really cool. And I'm adding to the creepy and cool by having a paranormal convention. That's right, me. I'm putting on this conference. I don't know why. I'm crazy. People have asked me, well, what made you want to do this? I don't know, because I'm insane. That's why. No, really, it's a way to gather people that I know and to bring something to this area, which has not really been done in a long time. I know Ravenna had one, gosh, probably 13, 14 years ago. And the Akron area has had mainly a ghost event every year, but nothing like this, where it's UFOs, cryptozoology, and ghosts all under one roof. And a lot of great people, great speakers, including Colin Schneider, host of Crypto Kid Radio right here on WCJV. I'll be there. I won't be speaking. I'll be the MC. I'll be kind of running around worrying about making sure everything is being taken care of. But I'll probably do a short intro for everything, and I'll introduce all the speakers and everything else. But a lot of talented people, and a lot of people with very diverse backgrounds. And it's not going to be about orb pictures and ghost team stuff that people do. And I mean, I know people like seeing that stuff, and I'm not bashing that, but there's a lot of good work that's going to be talked about here. And there's going to be some great ghost teams are going to be in the house. So people will be able to see all the tools, the technology, and talk to people that are out in the field. I mean, it's everything you could ever hope for a paranormal convention right here in North Twinsburg is, which you probably don't. What is this guy talking about? Akron, Ohio. You find Akron, Ohio on a map. You find Cleveland, Ohio on the map. We're pretty much right in between that. It's a really nice location. You can get here from Pennsylvania in about 2 hours. Pretty much anywhere in Pennsylvania is 2 hours away, right? Just like Texas, everything in Texas is 2 hours away from something else. And don't worry, weather-wise, even if it snows, located right off of a state route and right off of two interstates, as well as the toll road there, Route 80. So everything should be good. I'm not worried about the weather that much, but it's going to be a great time, and it's coming up fast, just over a month away. I'm really excited about this. Can you tell? Maybe you can't tell. I don't know. But it's going to be a good time. The Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, and you can find more information at twinsburgparanormal.com, and you get all the details of all the speakers that will be there. And we'll talk more about that, obviously, as we get a little bit closer to it and keep getting into – I don't know. I'm excited about that. And I know I talked – if you did listen to the Crypto Kid radio show last night, I did talk about the fact that I had a book of the week, and it was dealing with Eastern Cougar. Well, I'm not going to do that book this week. I'm not going to talk about it, because one of the main reasons is there is no cryptozoology news this week. Nothing really popped out. I mean, I could have talked about that weirdo guy that keeps making these strange Bigfoot videos on YouTube, but no, he's kind of annoying me at this point. So instead, we're going to jump into UFO news. I do have a strange animal story that, if I have time, I'm going to mention. I'm sure you've seen. I think it's cute. It's interesting. But UFO news, we're going to talk about MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And it's about its December sighting statistics. Usually, I get excited about talking about this, but you may know I've been a really dry spell about guessing the numbers. My predictions have never been worse. And so I kind of cringe when I see these numbers come up, because I know how bad I'm going to be. But anyway, looking back, and this is kind of a recap, we haven't really talked about MUFON sighting statistics, obviously, since the new year. But looking back, way back in December of 2015, MUFON reported 624 worldwide sightings, with 496 here in the United States. December of 2016 brought 539 total sightings, a little dip there, with 405 documented in the United States. Again, a little drop in those sighting statistics as well. And if we look back to 2 months ago, November of 2017, quite healthy number here, 697 total sightings, with 474 of those taking place here in the United States. So, yeah, my prediction for December was, again, way, way off. I guessed 627, a substantial drop from the November total. And then I guessed 445 in the United States. Again, a small dip in the number that was in November. Typically, there's not as many. The weather is bad. People are in shopping malls, or they're on their computer buying stuff for Christmas, so they're not really looking at the sky. That's kind of how I look at it, but apparently I'm wrong. Because for December of 2017, MUFON reported 737 total worldwide sightings, with 507 in the United States. So yeah, I was way off. Don't expect numbers to really go up in December, even though there is 31 days. Get that extra day tacked on. But again, these aren't really necessarily numbers that happen in that month. These are just reports that are reported in that month. So this something could have been reported way back in 1966, and they just happened to say, well, you know what? I'm at home. I'm snowed in. It's cold. It's 4 degrees below zero. Dog doesn't want to go out. So I'm going to talk to somebody about my 1966 encounter, and I'm just going to email MUFON my sighting statistic. Maybe that's what happened. I don't know. Tea time. And yeah, I don't know. It's quite an increase there, jumping all the way up to over 700 sightings. And let's see, looking at this year, I mean, it's only gone over 700 two other times the entire year. July, which you would expect to have a huge number of sightings, back in July of this year, or last year, 2017, 785 total worldwide sightings. Didn't crack 600 U.S. sightings with 593. But August, which is always another good month because the weather's nice, 821 total sightings, which is very substantial. The number one month of the year for 2017. Canada, this last month in December, they were second on the list with 59 reports. Yeah, quite a drop. Because obviously Canada is, I guess, not as involved with MUFON. They have their own sighting methods that they reporting methods that they use. And MUFON is, I don't think they're really as entrenched in any other country as they are here in the United States. There are people that do investigate in Canada and other countries, but obviously they're not as ramped up as they are here in the United States. So the word of mouth doesn't get out there. United Kingdom had 43 reports. Germany had 15. Australia had 13. Puerto Rico had 9. France had 8. Brazil was 7. Argentina and India had 6 reports each. And Ireland and Mexico turned in 5 reports each. And there were 34 other countries that turned in 4 or less reports, with 21 of those countries only turning in 1 report. Come on, guys. You got to see something floating around up there, right? Now, looking at the 507 United States sightings, well, here we go. California, big surprise, the number one state with 85 reports. And again, it should be, because it leads the country in population. And that's why I break down the per capita sightings, even though it's not really statistically significant. It does kind of align the states in a way that you can kind of see which state kind of reported a little bit more per capita, because it's, I mean, it would be the same 5 states leading it off over and over again. It's really boring to talk about, well, California was number one. That means there's more UFO sightings. Not necessarily. Florida was second with 3. Oh, no, it wasn't 3. I don't know what that, 30-something. I don't remember what it was. 39, I believe. Arizona was third with 36. Texas was next with 33. See, I can't even trust what I write. Jeez. Illinois with 26 sightings. Colorado was next with 23. Virginia had 18. Missouri and North Carolina had 15 reports each. Washington had 12. That's Washington State. Oregon and Pennsylvania had 11 reports each. Georgia, Ohio, and New Jersey turned in 10 reports each. And Utah, New York, and South Carolina turned in 9 reports each. So I like to, like I said, I like to break down the per capita, and I do it per 100,000. I'm thinking about adjusting that, maybe doing it per 200 or 500,000. I don't know. They just 100,000 is generally the rule when you're talking about any sort of statistics, where it's crime or any other maybe more positive type of statistic dealing with the public, and especially states or cities or anything like that. It's a nice round number, and regardless, it gives me percentages, which I like to have whole numbers, like parts, instead of just parts like arms and legs, like I talk about usually. I like to have whole bodies here, but I stick with the 100 per 100,000 because, again, it's the basic metric. And if you look at the United States as a whole, using the population data, United States comes in with a 0.164. And again, that's with the 507 sightings. And basically, you divide the population into that, then you multiply that by 100,000, and you get the 0.164. So basically, 0.164 of a person, 16% of a person reported a UFO. I don't know, maybe that's like a forearm and a hand. I don't know. It's creepy. California, like I mentioned, number one in sightings with 85. That breaks down to a 0.216. So that's actually above the U.S. average, which is still not significant, but at least it's above the average. Texas, the state of Texas, which is number two in population, according to the statistics that I used, they turned in a whopping 33. That's pretty good, right? Not really. 0.118. So statistically speaking, even though they're number two with the number of sightings, they're still not very, they were fourth, 33. It's still not very significant. 0.118, really, really insignificant, well below the U.S. average. Florida, which is number three in the stats, the population stats, they turned in 43 reports. Their per capita was 0.209, so above the U.S. average, but still not that significant. Arizona, I was really blown away by that, having to see Arizona up there third with 36. That's very significant, and that shows because Arizona is 14th in population. So for them to be way up there, number three on the list with the number of sightings with 36, I knew the number was going to be big, and it is 0.519. So over half a person. So if there's somebody running around there with one arm and one leg and half a torso and half a head. I'm sure somebody has a half a brain in Arizona. Well, I'm going to get an email about that, I'm sure. Then that person reported a UFO. So, again, you know, it's statistically speaking, yeah, it just sounds really, really insignificant that a half a person per 100,000 people in the state of Arizona reported a UFO in the month of December. Colorado, which is 21st in population for the United States, their per capita number was 0.415, which is pretty good, with their 23 reports. Oregon, which is 27th in population, had a 0.269 per capita number, and they had a total of 11 sightings. Utah, which is 31st in population, with a 0.295 with their 9 sightings. New Hampshire is way down there, number 41 in population, with a 0.375, that's pretty good, but it was with only 5 sightings. Montana is 44th in population. They turned in a 0.480 per capita number and with their 5 sightings. And Alaska, number 48, way down there on the list, 0.270 with 2 sightings. So the winner this month, I should say last month, I would go with Arizona. Obviously, 0.519, it was the largest number I could find per capita-wise, plus 36 whopping sightings. I'm not sure what happened in that month, if there was something that pushed those sightings in that direction, but maybe there was some sort of sighting. I don't know. Maybe they had a football game where people were skydiving with little flares on their feet, something. I don't know, and people reported that. I don't know. I'm just thinking logically here. But regardless, that's pretty impressive to see that. And looking back at the per capita breakdown throughout 2017, we've had some pretty impressive numbers this year. And when I say 0.519, that sounds pretty good. But we've had some really, really significant numbers, a little higher than that, going back to last month. We had Maine, the state of Maine, which is 42nd in population, I should say back in November, with a 0.676. Granted, it was with only 9 sightings. And October, New Mexico, which is 36 in population, had a 0.529 with the 11 sightings. See, the biggest one all year, you have to go back to, it looks like May. And in May, the state of Maine, once again, and back then, apparently the statistics had changed because now it's listed as the 41st state in population. I know the source that I used just updated a couple of months ago, but it says 0.827 with 11 sightings. That's pretty significant. Let's go back and look at that one. I'm sure something happened back then. And looking at stuff even closer, we can look back at, let's go back to 2015 for a second. Final statistics for 2015, 10,911 total sightings. And you break that down, that's 909.25 per month. And again, that's the total sighting statistics. That's pretty good. And granted, that was a very breakout year. That was the year that Hangar 1 was really significant. People were watching that, and they knew what MUFON was, and MUFON was all over the place. So they got a very big, large hit on their reporting system because of that TV show. 2016 saw a pretty big dip. 2016 final statistics, 7,276 total worldwide sightings. That breaks down to 606.3 per month. And U.S. sightings, 5,358. That's 446.5 per month. That's pretty good. And so we look at now 2017, a little bit better than 2016. 7,686 total worldwide sightings. And that breaks down to 640.5 per month. And U.S. total sightings, 5,480, which is 456.6 per month. And breaks down to a total of 0.148 as a per capita number for the United States. Oh, I just figured that would be an interesting number. So that's kind of the average for the year, which is, again, statistic-wise, looking at how many people are reporting per 100,000, that's pretty insignificant. I mean, granted, UFOs aren't like flying around everywhere. So, you know, what would be a really significant number? I mean, if it was two or three people per 100,000, is that significant? I don't really know. For an unknown type of event to happen, I mean, it would be semi-significant, especially if multiple people were seeing the same thing. I think it would be interesting. And if it didn't have a logical explanation, I guess that would be really significant. I don't know why I did this, just to probably beat myself up pretty good. I predicted my predictions. If you add all my predictions together, I predicted 7,247 worldwide sightings versus, again, the 7,686. I was a little under. And my predictions for the United States was 5,293. I guess that's not too bad versus the 5,480. Not too bad, I guess, over 12 months period of time. And so U.S. was 441 per month. Not too bad, but not really too close either. But it was fun. It was interesting. I like predicting things, even though I'm wrong 99% of the time, it seems like. I was pretty close there for a while earlier in 2017. I had a few that I was only off by a couple. So, I mean, come on. Cut me some slack. I don't know why, but I'm going to do this. I'll throw out a prediction for January just to make everybody happy. I'm going to go with 685 total worldwide sightings with 471 taking place here in the United States. That's my guess. I'm sticking to it, no matter how off I'm going to be. But it's still fun. It's still interesting to look at those numbers. And yeah, again, statistically insignificant, but still interesting because this is what people are reporting. This is what's being said out there. And again, I wish there was a way that we could just look at the numbers that were reported for reports in that month But hopefully, eventually, one day, MUFON will not only update their case management system, but also the reporting methods so that we can get a little bit closer, careful of a view. But again, that number would change month to month because people don't necessarily report those things in that month. Sometimes it takes a long time. It takes years to report things. I've gotten UFO reports from 20 and 30 years prior. How am I supposed to investigate that? It's pretty hard. I mean, granted, there is some astrological data that you can look up and you can see maybe what they saw, either stars, planets, or other celestial events to look back on. But as far as like radar data and anything like that, good luck. But, you know, that's just people do. They report that stuff years after it happens. And that's what we get. Anyway, you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, who got a little carried away there, carrying you into the bottom of the hour. But yes, UFO news, MUFON sighting statistics. It's been fun. And, you know, it's, I keep saying, statistically insignificant. And, you know, I bounce back and forth every now and again. I kind of don't even want to talk about them. But I don't, for some reason, I just feel that even a little bit of science interjected into the MUFON stats. I mean, it's again, it's insignificant, but I think it's interesting at the same time. And it kind of gives you a gauge of something with the UFO reports out there, other than some of these crazy misinterpretation stories, which we do cover, we do talk about. So I guess it is interesting. And now we're going to jump into ghost news. Don't normally have a lot of ghost news, but a couple of interesting stories this week. Kind of funny stuff, but this first one is, I don't know how you're going to take this one. You know, and I kind of bashed ghost investigation with the top 10 paranormal news stories. The number two story of last year was the a lot of the reports from physicists saying that since their instruments, since the Large Hadron Collider has never discovered anything, that ghosts don't exist. And granted, that's just one perspective, and it's an interesting perspective to take. And, you know, a few scientists stating the same thing is interesting, you know, and some people are just, they're just complete deniers of anything. They're so skeptical that they don't see the whole picture, nor do they ever want to. And it's just as bad as people that are complete true believers and can't get over the fact that cameras with flashes will produce orbs that are very explainable. No matter how many times you hit them over the head with the truth and the information, they don't want to believe you. And it's sad, but, you know, it's belief is a very powerful thing, and it can make us think things that really aren't true. And it does go both ways. With hardcore skeptics, sometimes I just don't think they see the whole picture because they don't want to. And their information. But this story comes from India, and I've known quite a few Indian ghost investigators over the years. And I'll tell you, India is very, very deeply connected to their folklore and their belief systems when it comes to ghosts. A lot of modern day beliefs, a lot of stuff that we believe here in the United States, as well as a lot of older folklore, demonology and demons, and a lot of other stuff that would just confuse us here in the United States, very heavily belief systems. And this story is interesting because a particular group has gone into attempt to basically not just refute a location being haunted, but to change the entire culture of one location. It's a station called Begunkador Station. It's a railroad station. It's been abandoned for 42 years, and it was reopened back in 2009. Now, the train station opened originally back in 1960, but was shut down in 1967 due to what is reported to be sightings of the ghost of a woman. Wow. A railroad worker that reported the sighting of the particular ghost and perpetuated through the local folklore. Now, this person also purportedly died a few days later. It was said that another worker set to replace the one that had passed away suddenly stopped showing up for work after a few days over the fear of this ghost. And locals began avoiding the station due to the stories, although railroad officials now debate this story that it was shut down because of the ghosts and all these other things. And this story, it's been spread by the website. You might probably have seen this. You know what I'm talking about. From the radio program Coast to Coast, they covered this story. And I don't normally cover stories that they cover, but it's kind of creeped into the other websites, and it clicked on one of my things, and I saw that Coast to Coast was covering this as well. And they kind of took the road of this perpetuated story without the other facts involved, which I thought was obviously kind of agenda-based because it is a paranormal-based website. Railroad officials state that the station was not shut down because workers refused to work there, but for other reasons, including rail line technology. And some say the ghost stories were actually made up since no one wanted to work at the fairly remote station. But either way, locals are said to avoid the station after 5 p.m., even though trains run through there up to 10 o'clock at night. So with these ghost stories perpetuating, people have become fearful of this place and don't want to go there. And it's become a kind of a hub of local investigators to go and, you know, do their EVP sessions and do their photography sessions and, you know, probably knock on the walls and do all the other stuff that ghost investigators do. But a group of 9 rationalists, I guess a rationalist is what they call skeptics in India. It's kind of the same thing. They spent the night at the station in an attempt to see the ghost and were armed with flashlights, cameras, compasses, and even police protection. The station has been used as a ghost tourism location and a location for ghost hunters and investigators. But this team wanted to see it for themselves and if something sinister existed in and around the building. Well, they kind of got their wish because around 2 o'clock in the morning, they heard something very strange. And they set out, they investigated this sound and were kind of startled to find that there were 4 or 5 locals who were hiding out behind the station. The group chased them away and concluded that they were more than likely there to fool the skeptics into thinking a ghost was present. Well, that's what the story says. But I mean, come on, be rational about that. If people were hanging out behind this haunted building, maybe, I'm just throwing it out there, maybe these were investigators themselves. Maybe they're just curious people that wanted to have their own experience, right? Makes a lot of sense, I would think. Maybe not to thwart these skeptics. Now, this group of rationalists did not have anything else happen. They didn't encounter any kind of ghosts. They didn't have weird readings on their compass. They didn't have any other strange things happen. So with that, they concluded that the railway station is not haunted. So I guess, you know, paranormal groups can put their stamp on approval of places that are officially haunted. So you can sell T-shirts and you can have TV shows come in and film, I guess. And I guess skeptics can do the opposite thing and proclaim that a location is not haunted, I guess. So you can sell T-shirts. I don't know how that works, but I don't know. That's the confusing part of the story. After 40 plus years of local folklore, this group has mysteriously proven that the station is not haunted after just one night of camping out there. I don't know. I find that hard to believe. But all the websites that are reporting the story are pretty much stating it matter-of-factly. You can rest assured that the station is not haunted now because, you know, you can go there now. You can go to the Bagunkador station. It's not haunted. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about 5 o'clock. Go ahead, you know, take your time. Go there later. I don't know. It just seems kind of weird that such deeply seated folklore and fear of the unknown, fear of ghosts, would just be completely washed away by a small group of people that saw stuff. But then again, you know, it started out the same way. It started out scaring people. So who knows? Maybe it would go away that quickly. But I don't know. That was the weirdest thing about the whole story, that how quickly they just dismissed the entire thing without question. And we throw I have quite a few links, but I'm not going to throw all of them in there. I'll scare you guys away. I don't want you guys being distracted by all these links, but I'm going to throw, there's that one. That's from thehindu.com. Where am I at? I'm lost. Well, here's another one. Well, why not? I'll throw three in there. I'll give you the coast to coast one as well. I don't think I'm competition for those guys, so I'm not saying that don't listen to that show, but this is just a link. It's harmless. So yeah, coast to coast, thehindu.com and telegraphindia.com. Weird. Thought Paranews Insider was odd. So there's a bunch of links there. Read away. Have fun. Don't fall asleep. So another story. This one, I don't know. I don't know what to think. This is the, let's just call it the strangest story of the year. I know. Week two. This is just week two. But this one gets the award so far. It's going to get the medal. It's going to get the plaque, whatever we're going to give this thing. Wow. This woman, United Kingdom. I'm just going to have to hit you with this one. A curious claim for the United Kingdom says that a woman can tell the future, not with a crystal ball, not with a mirror, not with tarot cards, but with asparagus. That's right, asparagus. And to top it off, her name is Jemima. I don't know if she's an aunt, but that would be pretty cool. So Jemima Packington calls herself the world's only asparamancer. And there's no such thing. I looked it up. Asparamancer. I have books on the subject. I could not find it anywhere. There is no such thing as asparamancer. But I guess you can make it up if you want. And she says that she can tell the future by tossing asparagus into the air and viewing the spears after it lands. My goodness, I hear people laughing out there. That's pretty good. Yes. I mean, it sounds absolutely nuts. It's crazy, right? You know, I don't want to make fun of her. I mean, just think of it this way. Consider that there are a lot of other divination techniques and that have been around a lot longer. Arachnomancy, divination from the appearance and behavior of spiders. Weird, creepy, and probably something that somebody would do from the comfort of a chair or table or a high-rise something, so they're not directly near them. Ceromancy, interpreting patterns in melted wax. Well, I won't even touch that one. Crithomancy, markings in freshly baked bread. If it's butter or cinnamon, that's great. I can predict my future. I know where I'll be at the table with a knife. Crominomancy is divination using onions. I can predict that I will be crying. Gastromancy is the predicting things by using the sounds of the belly. Gastromancy, I'd probably be pretty good at that one. Thyromancy, probably one of my favorites here. Thyromancy is divination using cheese. Cheese, I'm starting to get really hungry right now. Now, again, yeah, these sound crazy. But also remember that divination techniques also include pendulum, dowsing rods, Ouija boards, as in necromancy, and using a reflective surface, as in scrying, such as a mirror or crystal ball. I mean, okay, fine. All this stuff is crazy. But you watched Snow White, remember? And her magic mirror. Yes, it was magic mirror, not mirror mirror. Reading bumps on the head, that's phrenology. Some people think that's kind of cool. I mean, come on. I'm sure you've referred to a divination technique using the stars, right? People have checked their astrology charts. Some of us possibly use numerology or palmistry. And you might have had dinner once and actually practice alluromancy. A lot of you have. You just didn't know it. Alluromancy. Now, this is a divination technique using slips of paper baked into dough balls. That's right, fortune cookies. That's a form of divination. And of course, we also have the parapsychological things, precognition, psychometry, clairvoyance, and all the other clairs like clairaudience. I know a girl named Claire. Clairaudience and all these other clairs of the different senses, different divination techniques. So a lot of them don't even sound really, they all sound made up. They all sound funny and great. So, but asparagus, I mean, how accurate can that really be? And it's really cool too, because the story, I had to laugh, and I tried not to, because some people take this stuff really seriously, and I'm just touching the surface with these divination tech. There's a lot of even more wacky and wild, and probably some stuff that I really can't talk about right here on the radio. But yikes, just some really interesting stuff. But it's funny because in this article, they show her different photos of her throwing the asparagus in the air and the asparagus hanging in the midair. It's really breathtaking. Now, how accurate, again, how accurate can she be? Well, Jemima says, quote, I'm usually about 80 to 90% accurate with my predictions. I go through my predictions each year and think, yep, that happened. Yep, that's happened. Unquote. I don't know. To me, that just sounds a little fishy. It's easy to go after the fact and say, well, I was right. Oh, I was right about that too. How many was she wrong about? How does she know she was 90% accurate? I mean, if you guess 10 times, 9 of those 10s were completely accurate? Well, then when you look at her predictions, a lot of them are very vague. They're very generalized. There's the ones that are specific. The odds are pretty much in favor that those are going to happen anyway. And one of her biggest predictions of last year, wait for this. One of her biggest predictions last year was for an event to happen in the summertime. Hold on to your chairs. This is going to blow you away how accurate Jemima is. She said that in the summertime, it would rain. Yes, not only did it rain, but last year was the 11th wettest summer on record in the United Kingdom. She's a genius. Wow. Yeah, no, I'm making light of this. I'm making fun of it. But generalized predictions like that, a lot of it's she made some predictions on sports teams, which I don't even know any of these sports teams follow their type of football. I don't follow that. But it only took me a couple of seconds of research online from the year prior to really look at those teams to go, yeah, no kidding, they're not going to win. They stink. They're not going to win championships. So a lot of this is based on best guess, research, intelligent hunches. I don't think it really has so much to do with tossing asparagus. But if that's what she believes, I can't tell her she's wrong. Who am I to question the divine? I'm just a radio show host. That's it, folks. So let me throw that link in there. You got to check out these pictures. I bet you can't wait. And if you are not listening to the show live and you're listening to this recorded as a podcast, don't worry. If you go to my socials, go to facebook.com/Paranews Insider. Find me. Just search for it, Paranews Insider. Or also in Twitter, @Paranews Insider. I'll have all these stories. And don't worry, my Facebook is connected to Twitter. So anything that I put into one is going to be on the other. And you can get all these links and you can check out these awesome pictures of this asparagus. Maybe you can look and you can stare at this picture and you can pick out something that maybe Jemima missed. I don't know. Maybe you can. I think it's great. I got to find something like that. I got to find my niche in divination. There's got to be something out there for me. There is stuff with wine, predicting the wine. I don't know how that works. Maybe you drink the whole bottle and maybe you predict the future. I'll have to try that one sometime. Maybe that'll be my niche. So anyway, like I said, I was going to do the Eastern Cougar book for the book of the week. But with this, I had such an opportunity, and you know, I'm clever like this. I generally like to tie the book of the week in with some subject matter that's going on with the news of the week. And I don't really get too much of a chance to talk about divination during the show. And I did have the opportunity back in November of 2017. I was a speaker at the excavation of Victorian ghosts at Bedford Springs Resort in Bedford, Pennsylvania, with hosts John Sable and Mary Becker. And a lot of other people were present. Brandon Masullo, who's also a speaker at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, which is coming up February 17th, twinsburgparanormal.com. See what I did there. He was also in attendance. He also was a speaker, and a lot of other great people. And we got to participate in probably one of my favorite divinations. And I've done a lot of this stuff. I've done a lot of table tipping, table turning, seances, different things. And we got to do a table tipping session in the same room as the one of the longest standing tables used in the Philip experiment back in the 1970s in Toronto by the Toronto Society for Psychical Research and their Philip experiment. That was phenomenal just to be in the same room with that thing, as well as to do a table tipping session. But we also, later on in the night, with Rosemary Ellen Guiley at the helm, got to partake in essentially a seance using a black mirror. And I was interested in this, and I've heard of black mirror scrying before and thought it was interesting and a little different, different than your crystal ball stuff that's very generic, in my opinion, and it's used by a lot of people. And I don't think there's really anything really to that, to be honest. But with the black mirror, I've known quite a few people that have used this in the past, and it's actually freaked some people out. So I think it's interesting, whether it is just your mind playing tricks. But a lot of people really have a really interesting claim with this. So I was really interested in Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She has quite a collection of books, and she's been around for a while. She's very knowledgeable, and I think over 50 books. And so I picked up her book, which is the book of the week, The Art of Black Mirror Scrying. And yeah, me, of all people, I know, weird. But it's a very good book. It's really interesting. It spends a lot of time talking about the history of black mirrors and scrying in general. But yeah, thanks, Dita, for the little squiggly thing. The book focuses a lot of attention on the history. But a lot of people have complained about that on Amazon and different things. But I think it's necessary. If you're going to do something like this, you need to understand the history of it and be aware of where all this stuff comes from and what it's doing, or what other people have thought it's done, or people involved with this, such as Nostradamus. Ooh. I've heard of him before. But yeah, I'd say a good chunk of this, 60% of this book deals with the history, which is important. And looking at this thing, it's 164 pages. There's a lot of references here in the back. That's her books, maybe. Yeah, it's her bibliography. Never mind. A lot of books that she's written. And, this is the one that I zoned in on because I knew we were going to be doing this. And there's some examples. There's how to make your own mirror in here. Pliny the Elder. I don't remember reading that part. yeah. Anyway, a lot of history. It goes way back. And talks a lot of subject matter here that I found really interesting about the history of scrying and some of the divination techniques and the mirrors itself some of the technology as well. So I think it's really, really worth the read if you're into such a thing, or you're thinking of getting into this, or you want to experiment with different divination techniques. Now, this book came out in 2014. Again, you can get it on Amazon, and I've shared that link in the chat room, and I will be sharing that during the week. It's usually later on in the week. It's usually right over the weekend. But again, you can search for this book on Amazon yourself. You're a big boy. You're a big girl. Now, I don't mean that. Oh my gosh, I didn't should have said it that way. But you know what I mean. You're of able to use Google. So again, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, The Art of Black Mirror Scrying, and that's spelled S-C-R-Y-I-N-G. It's not scrying or scurrying, or I hear people pronounce it different ways, scurrying. No, it's scrying. It's like crying with an S, so scrying. Yeah, there's 12 chapters here, and let's see, I guess five of them are really historical. And then it gets into the psychomantium with Dr. Raymond Moody. So she trained basically with Dr. Raymond Moody. So there's a little bit of history going up into her exploration of using this technique and moving her way into understanding and utilizing this technique. And then she goes on to kind of teach you how to do this. So it flows really well. And I don't think that there's too much time spent on the history. I think it's a very, very good, I haven't really challenged the research or anything like that. There's not really a whole lot of references to the history. So you're kind of at will with it, but it doesn't really seem to go against anything that I've ever heard before. So it just really is there to support, really to support the interest of you using this thing. I wouldn't take it as complete 100% fact, but what can you in history anymore? But it does really kind of lure you into wanting to use this technique. And we used it that night, and a couple of people in the audience, we had, my gosh, it was like maybe 15 people around the table, very large table. And a few people had some stuff happen to them, some personal experiences. Some people saw some stuff. I was a little tired, to be honest, but it was Brandon's fault. He kept us up late. I don't know. I didn't really experience anything, but it was really interesting to observe and to watch. And I did participate for a little while, and I tried. I did try. I wasn't being skeptical. I just didn't really maybe it just wasn't my night. We just really didn't have anything happen. But it was a great privilege to be at the table with Rosemary and all the other people that were there. It was a lot of fun just to, at least to observe and to interact with those that were there at the table. And it was a fun night. It was a great experience. It wasn't meant to be perfect or to have things happen, just really to experience that as well. But it was a lot of fun. And again, Rosemary Ellen Guiley's The Art of Black Mirror Scrying is the book of the week this week here on the Paranormal News Insider. And what else do I have? Oh gosh. Other news. I have one more story here. This is a letdown. I know. I was going to put this in the UFO category, but I decided not to because of the story. Because why? Probably saw this as well, and I've kind of passed on this, talking about this a couple of months ago. This story is kind of old at this point, but it's gaining some traction in the news all over, not just paranormal news, but everywhere. I don't know why. It's already been really talked about. This deals with the star with a really cool name, KIC 8462852. Sounds like something out of Star Trek, but it's famously known as Tabby's star. Well, it's back in the news again this week. And that's the one, if you remember, that scientists, yes, scientists stated maybe, just maybe, there's some sort of alien megastructure around this thing. And yeah, a lot of people flipped out about that, which, you know, good reason. You would never expect that to happen. But no, an alien megastructure has not been found surrounding this star, despite the wishes and dreams of many people out there. Analysis by over 200 astronomers has finally determined that the most plausible cause of the strange dimming of the star is a giant cloud of dust that gets in the way of our observation of the star from time to time. This might have been caused by the collision of two comets, or possibly of just one breaking up. There is also the possibility that the star is suffering from some sort of convulsion, which has never been observed before. Astronomers were baffled, I love that word, baffled by the fact that Tabby star dimmed by a massive 20%, then 15%, with the observation that even a large planet passing in front of it would only dim the star by 1%. So that's a massive amount of dim to occur. Now, this was back in October of 2015 when astronomers threw out the vague possibility that maybe, again, just maybe, the star is surrounded by some sort of alien megastructure. Now, further analysis, I won't get too far in deep with the science here, but this pointed toward blue wavelengths of light, showing more of a dip in brightness versus red wavelengths of light. Basically, this means that the shorter wavelengths were being scattered more easily than the longer red, which pointed toward the dust hypothesis, smaller particles. The results will soon be published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters. So be sure to look for that. I'm sure it's great reading. Not really. It's not. I've just basically given you all you need to know. Don't worry. Don't read it. Well, you can read it if you want, if you're interested in such a thing. I love astronomy. I love these exoplanet discoveries, obviously, because that was the number one story for the Paranormal News Insider. But anyway, that's a wrap. That's it. That's all I got this week. I know, really thin, but some interesting stuff. And I didn't get to mention, I want to mention the, let's see, where'd it go? That little rabbit, you guys see that? The rabbit, it's got the cross mysteriously appeared on the rabbit's forehead. My goodness, what is going on with that? Well, I thought it was cute because it says, the story says, well, that's one hot cross bunny. It's something that's truly hair-raising. I don't know. I thought it was funny. I don't think it's really anything to flip out about. This is a very young rabbit. It's just born. I don't know what they call baby rabbits. Baby rabbits? Is that what they're called? That's what I call them. Unless they're chocolate, then I call them gone. Well, it's grown a little cross in the middle of its forehead. It's a she. And, you see the picture. It's pretty cool. But the family's not all caught up in it. They're not claiming that this is like, baby Jesus born as a rabbit or anything like that. They're not getting carried away. Other people are. And apparently the news is, because it's a slow news month so far. But it's a baby rabbit. It happens. Their hair grows in funny. I'm sure there's another logical explanation. It's cute, but let's not get carried away. Let's throw that link out there. I don't know, in case you're bored. But that's it. That's all the news. I mean, that's how boring this time of the year gets sometimes. But it's very hair-raising. Spooky and scary. We'll see. Maybe this rabbit has something to say. We'll find out. Maybe next week. Yeah, I don't know. But for that, I will see you next week. My goodness, January is almost over. It'll be the third show out of five shows in January. Weird. 5 weeks for me in January. It's a lot of news. But I will see you next week. And for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Reporting.